Welcome to episode 31 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, hordes, and whatever else is on our minds. Hey everybody, and welcome to The Iron Agenda, the podcast from Dinosaur Hell. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat. So from Dinosaur Hell, what's that all about?
Well, I think we spoke briefly about Transmorphers the other week.
Of course, with the stuttering, transforming building.
Yes, and I found something even worse on Netflix.
Wow.
Nympho Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell.
Whoa, whoa. Nympho Barbarian?
Yes.
I like where this is going, Josh. I didn't know you were into that kind of movie. I thought that was only my forte.
Well, like, it's 1.5 stars.
Is that the lowest rated movie on Netflix?
It's the lowest one in my queue. You know, I went through, they don't have all the coolest new movies in there, so I just went through all their backlog, I guess, and found the weirdest ones are ones I had never seen. And I certainly had never seen Nympho Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell. So I queued it up and watched about 30 minutes or so of it, and I couldn't look away.
So it'd be safe to say that you still have not seen Nympho Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell.
That is fair to say.
So in the 30 minutes that you did see, what's the general gist of it?
It's post-apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm.
The main character apparently is this woman who is a nympho. She says... Okay. You don't see anything on screen that really characterizes her as that?
At least in the first 30 minutes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And she's fighting these mutants and these stop-motion animated dinosaur mutant guys. There's a guy. There's another guy who I don't even know his name yet. The only word he's spoken so far is bitch, referring to the Nympho Barbarian. And he shoots this crossbow, the bolts of which have no quarrel and have no fletching or anything on it. I don't know how he shoots them so straight and accurately. But he must be really good because they're just like
Wait, I've seen this movie.
No, that was my home video.
No, there was an animated version, called Dragonlance.
Oh yeah.
But I see something on your screen that looks like a Sleestak.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually one of the better looking special effects in the movie.
Wow.
But it's horrible. It's absolutely horrible.
So judging by the name, I would assume that the only way to save mankind from dinosaurs is to sleep with them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So moving off that topic.
There we go. I wanted to quickly say something about episode 29. Dave and I had a little discussion about Balder and his feet, and it wasn't until after we recorded the last episode that I caught a mistake during that discussion, so this is coming a couple weeks late. Ignore that entire discussion, because it's based on an errant reading that I did of the clarification and errata. If you go to the forums in episode 29, its thread will explain the mistake I made. But in essence, when we talked about making mistakes in that episode, we weren't kidding.
Fair enough.
There we go. And yeah, it should have been obvious during the discussion, but it didn't click in my head until long after. So sorry about that. We like to make sure that our big mistakes are discussed and exposed to the light of truth here.
How about we go to some more business?
We can do that. Up in June, June 5, 6, and 7th, we have DICON 9 coming to St. Louis. And as usual, Privateer Weekend will be part of that. Privateer Weekend 2, to be in fact, this year. If you go to www.dicon.com, that's DICON.com, you'll see the webpage for DICON 9. And there'll be a link on the left that talks about weekend registration. Unfortunately, that part of the site is now down. But keep your eye on it. We'll provide a link to you. And keep checking it so you can pre-register for DICON 9 and all the Privateer Weekend events, which includes a new hardcore.
Yep.
There will be a $5 fee at the door. You can't pay it online. You'll be able to pay it at the door at DICON if you want to play in hardcore. It's $5. And that goes toward extra prize support, which includes a dog tag that you can that you'll have if you play into hardcore.
And if you pre-register.
No, everybody gets a dog tag. If you pre-register on the website, there will be a space where you can say a screen name or your name. And so if you pre-register, you can get that printed on the actual dog tag. So if you pre-register, you get a personalized dog tag. If you just play, you get a regular dog tag that is not personalized for you.
And these are, at least they were in the past, on top of the basically aluminum dog tag, there was like some cork embossing. And it was a mm-hmm. large surface that was carved. I know we switched to a different vendor for it this year. I don't know if it's going to look the same.
It will not be wood like it was in the previous years. It's just going to be an anodized metal. It still looks really nice.
Okay.
So it's going to be cool, but it just won't be the wood. So.
Okay.
Let's see. Do we want to talk about the events?
Yeah, let's just run down the events real quick.
Okay, real quick. I think we have a total of a dozen events or so over the course of the weekend.
Quite a few run concurrently, though.
Yes, that's correct. On Friday, June 5th, there'll be a 750 War Machine Steamroller 4, a 750 Hordes Steamroller 4, an open constructed Monster Apocalypse tournament with a single monster, and a 350-point Mangled Metal / Tooth and Claw Hardcore, and that will follow the SR4 events.
Now, doesn't the Monster Apocalypse event, isn't that at the same time as the Steamroller events?
Yes, that is correct. So all the those two Steamroller events and the Monpoc will be at the same time, and then after all that, you can play in the 350 Mangled Metal Tooth and Claw Hardcore. There will also be special prizes for the Tooth and Claw Hardcore, the Mangled Metal Tooth and Claw Hardcore. There'll be little trophies that have little bodgers and things on top of them. So there'll be cool prizes for that one if you win. So at 9 o'clock, we'll have a 750-point Hardcore. Also at 9 o'clock, there'll be a 750-point Hordes War Machine Random Caster event. So go to the Iron Agenda website or the PP web or the Daikon website to find out more information about that, about how that's going to go. There will also be an open Monster Apocalypse tournament, single monster event again, and that will follow the Hardcore. Also following Hardcore at the same time, there will be a 350-point War Machine Hordes 1-1-1-1 event where you can have, what, a Warlock, Warcaster, a Jack, a Unit, and a Solo, I believe.
Yep.
And the specific rules on that you'll have to look up. I don't want to go into detail there. And then also following that event, there will be Captain Salty Dog's Iron Kingdom Trivia Challenge, where you can win prizes and glory.
Arr.
On Sunday, June 7th, at 9 o'clock, we'll have three concurrently running events. There'll be a 750-point Mixed Steamroller 4. There'll also be a 350-1,000-point Escalation Tournament, where your list will grow with each round. And also, at the same time, there'll be an Open Constructed Monpoc Tournament. This time, it is a double monster event, so you'll actually be able to take two different monsters in that event. Now, throughout the entire weekend, we'll have Captain Salty Dog's Brain Teasers, so for every tournament that you're at, you'll have a chance to win another separate prize. That has nothing to do with how you performed in that tournament. There'll also be an ongoing Tide of War, which is similar to Eternal War like we had last year, and Eternal War that you see at TempleCon. It includes all of the games you play outside the tournaments and the games you play inside the tournaments, all those points added together, and whoever wins will win a special prize, which we're all putting together, and you'll see that at the event. I guess I don't want to give too many details, right? It's a big prize. And that's it.
On top of it, we're also giving away other prizes throughout the week. And I think that we have some people in St. Louis that are paying up some alternative and updated battle boxes.
Mm-hmm.
How are those going to be given out this year?
I think they're random.
Random?
I think they're random.
Door prizes?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Actually, that's how they've been called, I think. So they are just door prizes. So for every tournament, there'll be a battle box randomly given away.
Sure. And it'll be stuff like... I think like Asphyxius, a Helldiver, one of the Arc Nodes, and the Cankerworm.
Yeah. So I think there might even be. I thought there were five total models in that battle box actually. So it's quite a few.
Okay.
It's like four Bone Jacks and Asphyxius.
Okay. But basically, you know, updates of like if there's Vlad, Drago will be with him. I'm not sure what all the lists are.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know the. I think Korluck and a few Dire Trolls is the troll one, for example.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
So. And by few, I mean the Earthborn, the Blitzer, and I think a regular Dioctrol. So it's not like all the same model.
So that'll be pretty cool. And those are, they're all going to be fully painted, fully assembled.
Yep.
And, you know, it's a pretty good deal if you walk away with one of those.
That's an excellent deal, yeah. And hey, it's free.
Well, one thing you did mention, though, Josh, is the entire weekend, if you pre-register, it does cost $20.
That is correct.
And it's $25 at the door if you wait till then.
That's right. And if you go through PayPal on the website, I think there's an extra dollar surcharge. So keep that in mind if you're concerned. Yep. But you can also pay by, I think, money order and maybe personal check. You'll have to go to the weekend registration site once it finally gets up again.
But we're all going to be there, hanging out, playing games.
That's right. Looking forward to see everybody there. You planning on showing up, Pat?
Yep.
Sweet.
What about me? You don't care?
I know you'll be there. You're a given. You'll be winning hardcore and all that crap.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, I wish that 350 wasn't a hardcore. I'd like to play in that, but yeah, you know.
Actually, Josh played the 350 hardcore at War Machine Weekend, and you liked it a whole lot, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was to be painted and everything, but it was really fun.
That's what I meant by it. I don't mind the time.
You got a couple of months?
Anyway.
My Darius is almost painted.
Cool.
You can borrow him.
I have one more piece of news if we're done.
Sure.
I'm going to go ahead and throw shit out there.
Throw shit.
Oh, yes. I've actually started updating my blog again.
Cool.
It was initially, and still is, basically a gaming blog. You know, role-playing games, miniature games. I post works in progress of my painting stuff up there. All that kind of stuff. I've finally gotten back into posting on it, and I'll go ahead and throw a link in the show notes.
Well, your link's on the front page anyway.
Mm-hmm. Is it still? I thought I got rid of it.
Oh, maybe you did. I haven't looked. I just remember it being up there.
It's somewhere, because I know I go to it every once in a while.
Nope, you removed it.
Okay. So I'll put a link in the show notes to that, as well as I'll go ahead and link to my miniature gallery, which I need to get updated as well. Figured why not go ahead and throw that up there.
You're so self-promoting there, Dave.
I am self-promoting.
On your own.
Well, hey, you know, if you actually check out some of the blog hosting websites, there's quite a few War Machine blogs nowadays.
Really?
But it's really easy to find War Machine and Horde's blogs within those communities because they have their built-in search features, categorization, all that. I host mine on my own website. I have my own domain, which all my stuff rests in. You know, searches on those communities like Blogger or LiveJournal don't pick it up. So
right.
So there you go.
All right, is that it for the news?
I'm done with my self-promotion.
Is that all the news that's fit to talk about?
It's all the news that's fit to be news.
Okay. Well, we're in trying times here in St. Louis, War Machine and Hordes-wise. We received news the other day that yet another one of our stores will be closing in late April, a month from today.
Yep.
Game On will be closing its doors.
Oh.
Pat was not aware.
I was not aware. I've been out of the... I've been out of it for a while. So what happened or what's going on?
Well,
I don't know how much we can talk about.
Well, you basically, foot traffic dropped. Yeah.
Can't hold a business if people aren't buying.
Yeah. And, I mean, the War Machine community and I think you said the Magic community were doing a lot to keep them afloat, but it wasn't quite enough.
Mm-hmm. So it's certainly understandable. I mean, obviously nobody wants to keep a business open if it's not working for you.
I mean, he's going to try and reopen after he can get out of his current lease and go somewhere else,
and he's
which he's been wanting to do anywhere anyway. But
and they're doing sales online still.
Yeah, but it's a shame because that was our primary War Machine area, our War Machine location in St. Louis.
If we can't go online and play, really?
No, not so much.
Can't play in the inner tubes.
Actually, you can
on Vassal.
On Vassal,
never tried it.
Me neither.
Not looking forward to it.
So, oh boy, that is a shocker.
Yeah,
man, I did not know what you're talking about.
This is real, folks. It's not rehearsed.
Yeah,
that sucks.
We explicitly didn't tell Pat before we started recording because, you know,
we wanted the raw reaction.
The raw reaction.
This is real. This is reality.
Show me blue steel.
I'm even censoring a little bit because I want to go on a rant. But damn, where are we gonna play now?
Well, that kind of raises the question. Like as Josh mentioned, we are kind of in somewhat trying times. Between the loss of the primary location, which we gamed on weekly, as well as the fact that with the release of Mark II, there are some people who, I mean, I'm sure every community has them, are just, you know, doomsaying and talking about how horrible the new version is before they've ever actually seen anything on which to base honest opinions.
Mm-hmm.
That begs the question of, okay, this could potentially be a bad time for War Machine in the area. We could lose quite a big portion of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And so the question is, what do you do when something like that happens?
Right.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, and that just goes along with the fact of that's just sort of the way of things. When anything changes, you're going to lose a certain number of people. You might gain some new people, but you certainly will take a hit. You're going to lose people. They'll probably stream back in. Hopefully, they'll come back in. But yeah, I think you're right. You're going to see a downturn. Hopefully, it won't be too bad, but it's definitely going to. I think it's going to happen.
And we're certainly not alone in this. I mean, stores are closing everywhere, not just because they're gaming stores, which typically don't do well in the first place, but because of the economic situation we're in. I'm sure we are not the only area experiencing this.
No, not at all.
And everybody's experiencing Mark II.
Yeah, it's bad all over.
We do have one kind of advantage in St. Louis is currently until Game On closes, we have three shops in St. Louis that support War Machine in one form or another. When Game On goes away, there are still alternative locations. But the problem is, you know, kind of have to actually talk to some people locally is I think that one of the things that our community really needs to do to survive something like this is get together and decide to support a store.
Mm-hmm.
To keep, I mean, because everybody can't retreat to their basements. I think that could be the worst thing that could happen for a community when this happens is to retreat to your basement. Not because basement gamers are evil or anything like that. We used to game in my basement. That's not, not a problem.
But when everybody does that, things stagnate.
Exactly. For one thing, there's no public facing side of the community, which can draw people to it. You know, people won't know there's a big War Machine community in St. Louis if that community is kind of underground.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise, if all that community is restricted to people's basements, then the store owners don't realize how big of how much business they could do if they actively supported the line and ran events and hosted them and stuff like that. So it's, I mean, I think it's the community's responsibility to maintain a public image in which to communicate with both the store owners mm-hmm. and potential new players that the community exists.
I agree. And in St. Louis, and again, I have no idea what the situation is like in other cities, but between the two shops that are going to remain more or less geographically, there's going to be a schism, which is ironic because we have Metamorphosis Schism coming up. But geographically, we have people up in St. Charles who aren't going to want to drive, you know, what, 45 minutes, hour to get the other store and vice versa for people who live near the other store.
Well, the people currently in St. Charles went to Fantasy Shop anyway. I don't think they even came the game on.
Yeah.
Right. So, they do occasionally, I mean, but it's even worse now.
For people who aren't familiar with the terminology thrown around, basically the middle of the three stores geographically is closing.
Right.
Yeah. And geographically,
puts an even bigger wedge exactly. in between
well,
players.
And geographically, that so it affects me too because Game On is close to where I am. Mm-hmm. It's not right across the street from me, but it's about 15 minutes from my house. Mm-hmm. So now Miniature Market is going to be about
5 minutes from my house.
Well, yeah, I was going to say for you guys, Josh, it seems like you're hopefully going to be moving soon. It's going to be like right across the street from you.
It sounds like I'll be moving 2 miles from Miniature Market.
Yeah. So you're going to be real close and you're close too. And that's fantastic. But, like for me, it's like a 40 minute drive just to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, geographically, that's hard on people, to have to deal with that kind of thing.
And there's others. I mean, there are other issues too. Because there are some people who, for whatever reason, prefer not to go to certain game stores. Maybe mm-hmm. Maybe it's closer or a different selection of models that they like or something. Sure. Or a store owner that they're friends with or whatever.
There are a variety of reasons.
So, that's another issue. I mean, people might not want to go to one store. They might want to go to the other one. But mm-hmm. unless we kind of stick together as a community, we could, like you said, wind up fracturing things.
Yeah, and that would be, worse, I guess. I think I would rather everybody become basement gamers for another year rather than just fracture everything and not have the game played anymore.
Oh, yeah. Or beyond that, if we as a community have to come together and figure out where can we go non-store-wise and meet out in the community. I mean, is there a place? Like, is there a place where we can congregate that we can still get together and game?
That's actually an excellent point. Because of the two stores that are left, one doesn't host a whole lot of miniature events.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one hosts a large number of miniature events from a large number of games. Mm-hmm. So there aren't always a lot of weekends open which War Machine events can be held.
Right?
Mm-hmm. We mentioned, I don't know if we mentioned this before, but this is the second store that closed in the past, what do you think, 6 months in St. Louis?
They closed. So Gamerground closed in about 6 months or so. Yeah, we've lost two. And then in the past year and a half, we've lost three.
Right.
Next month, we'll have lost three.
And there has been some talk of the two store owners who currently recently shut down and are shutting down,
mm-hmm.
renting out some space once in a while to hold events in that way.
Right.
Because both of them also maintain internet presences for the moment.
Yes.
So that's actually a possibility, which if we didn't have those stores, we could probably look into ourselves would be, renting out space. I don't know if you guys know this, which way you come to my house, but like right across Big Bend out here, there is a VFW hall,
mm-hmm.
which can be rented out, just stuff like that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The problem is the community then has to do a lot more footwork if there's no stores.
There's a lot of carrying tables back and forth, setting up, a game store, everything's set up right there. You just walk in and boom, it's done. This would, like you're saying, a lot more footwork, a lot more overhead, I guess.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Another problem we're going to have, and you sort of alluded to this, I think, Dave, with only two stores in the city, our number of tournaments per month is going to go down. We usually have three events a month, sometimes more if you count Monsterpocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure any given store would love to have tournaments every week because they'll probably make money off of it. But with so many other events happening at these stores, it's not going to be the time.
No, it's not.
We have the personnel to handle it, but not the time.
Right. And that's actually with the loss of two stores recently, we have a
press ganger surplus.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm not privy to it. Well, I don't know what they're going to do about that, but hopefully that'll work out.
So
maybe they'll just rotate less often.
Yeah, or, if they could work up some sort of deal with, like a VFW hall or something like that, say, hey, we'd like to rent out one of your places once a month. We can guarantee once a month. Mm-hmm. Can you lower your rates or something like that?
There you go.
I mean, that would be nice. The only problem is, though, that's one step away from the gaming club.
It is.
Idea. Yes. Are you familiar with this?
Not specific. I mean, I know of gaming clubs. Right, well, right. Work even, but not maybe what you're talking about.
Kind of like people getting together, forming a club, in most cases charging membership.
Oh. Dues of some sort.
And in return for that, sometimes, I don't know how distributors feel about this now, if they still let it happen, but they will get almost a merchant's license and be able to order direct from distributors. Mm-hmm. And that's happened, and that used to happen years ago. I don't know how prevalent it is anymore because I've always just gone to a store.
Right.
But I mean, if we do something like find a facility and host something there once a month,
mm-hmm.
that's really only the, well, I mean, you're going to have to charge admission. Mm-hmm. So that's really close to the idea of the gaming club right there.
And that's
which
really,
doing so kind of excludes the stores, which is not what we want.
I was about to say that's the antithesis of what we want, because doing that just won't help the stores at all. We need to come up with a solution, some sort of temporary solution that will keep the game going without dying and support the stores while they're going through this tough time, like everybody is.
Right.
One thing that was brought up in somewhere else in a different conversation, there are other stores in the city. I can only think of one, but there's probably more than one that don't host anything with War Machine Hordes. They don't have that product, not because they're hating on the community or anything, because they don't know about it or they don't think that it could support it. If we could find a place that could support it, had the space and whatnot, talking to those people and having them bring in the product might generate more a different place to go, more community involvement, so that people don't do go to their basement, so people don't feel like they have to run out of BFW Hall every month.
How do you convince a store, though, that you would be willing to, or that the community is able to purchase enough product to justify them bringing in stuff regularly?
Nowadays, I have no idea how you do that. That would be such a huge purchase for that store to make, right. A huge risk.
I mean, we're kind of talking about it from the fact that our community has a huge manpower advantage mm-hmm. over some other places. Like, if you've got a community where they have like 8, maybe 10 War Machine players,
right. That's not
and a store goes under, then yeah, that's it's much harder than if we have our bazillion. I don't know how many we have.
I think what you would almost have to do is, as a community, you would just sort of have to go to that store and start trying to play there before you make demands on them or suggestions that they start buying this product.
Well, I was going
to
say,
if you could maybe get in there and run some games or whatever else, the stores would see that, see these people with all this stuff, and see that there's maybe a demand there, and then so that they could get into it. Whereas and they would see that from what it is, as opposed to taking a leap of faith that I'll buy all this junk and you're going to buy it from me, you know?
Well, I think what you got to do is, if you have a press ganger or some other community leaders, you got to get the release schedule, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You go around the people locally and say, okay, for the next X months, as far out as the release schedule goes, what do you want? What do you want? What are you going to buy? You mark up the counts on this release schedule. And you take it to the store that you're going to play with and say, look, this is how much people are going to buy for the next couple months. You don't have to order it ahead of time.
Right.
You know, the release schedule for this first week of releases is X. If you buy this many of each of these products, we can basically guarantee their sales. If you're going to do that, though, your community really needs to step up and make sure that they owe up their commitments.
Yep.
So they don't give the store owner a bad impression.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
But by convincing the store owner that you've got a regular source of income, you know, the store owner gets it set up, starts making regular special orders, and eventually, as the community picks up, maybe buys a couple of starter boxes or some of the more commonly purchased units,
mm-hmm.
you know, start stocking some of that. But it's like you guys said, I mean, it's in this economy, it's really hard to convince anybody to gamble with their money in the kind of environment. Yeah.
I think what you got to realize too is, just like you're saying, it's whatever you're going to be doing, it's going to be a startup effort. You're not going to just go into a new store and overnight have them all of a sudden be your new supplier of everything you want.
Right.
It's going to be a gradual thing, if it even happens at all.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, like you said, pull together as a community and support it and just do the best you can to, you know, make it right. better.
Well, I mean, for what it's worth, you know, we talk about not having a full run of things. I mean, Walker still to this day doesn't have a full line of War Machine and Hordes products.
Sure.
The line's way too expansive. I mean, mm-hmm. it would be silly to expect a store to have everything.
Yeah, it's pretty rare for that to happen.
But Walker had all the, or and still has, all the stuff that was commonly purchased.
Mm-hmm.
All the new releases. He had, basically, he took special orders from everybody. He knew how many he needed to get in. Everyone always had all the ones that they wanted. And if you, you know, if you needed something, it would be in the next week. Like, oh, I need a box of Manowar. It'll be in the next shipment, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, at this point, I think the best you can hope for out of a game store. Unless it is also more or less a warehouse for online purchases.
Right.
What about the, I mean, we talked about the fact we had a store closing. What about the Mark II impact on the community? I mean, we listed both those as having a, an impact on the fact that we're kind of living in interesting times.
Right. Yeah. Even if the economy wasn't so crappy and stores were booming, I think you'd still see people either leaving the game or considering leaving the game just because of the huge change that we're about to see. I mean, we've already seen people online and in real life talk about how they don't think it's going to go well, or they will think it's going to go well, what's going to happen, what's not going to happen, without really much information so far. So I've always taken the tack as, well, I'm going to shut my mouth until I actually see something to comment on.
Yeah.
But until then, you're going to have people speculating, and for good reason. You know, it's fun. You know, it's interesting. It's something we're involved in, so why not speculate on it? But I think if that goes too far, if there's too much naysaying, too much negative feelings about it, you might turn people off when they didn't have an opinion in the first place. I think spreading that negativity is a bad idea, because you're going to turn people away from a game before they've even seen it. Maybe somebody hears it who doesn't even play the game. They think, well, I'm not going to get involved in this because it sounds stupid.
Well, I mean, we've had a number of spoilers for the upcoming No Quarter, which kind of talks about the new version.
Right, right.
And based off hearsay on spoilers for incomplete rules, I don't see how anybody could even have formulated a solid opinion on whether or not the rules are good yet. I don't even see how someone can think they have enough information yet.
Well and I agree, they can, but it's just the mentality. I mean, you see this in anything, any kind of a game, be it, you know, tabletop or online, whatever else. Like, you know, take MMOs for example. When they start, you know, doing an update or a patch to for you know, an online game, the people, you know, they hit the forums and they're all of a sudden gloom and doom, saying, oh my God, this is going to suck now, or they're going to make this totally overpowered, whatever. I think it's that kind of mentality. And, you know, and you're going to have that even after it drops, and people are going to be saying, oh, this sucks now, when it's, you know, it really doesn't. And further, what I was going to say, building on your point, Josh, is I think the double whammy that you're going to get here is the fact that we are in this, we're going to have a dearth of places to play. How I see that affecting it is, normally, what you'll have is, when something changes, there is some resistance to it. But what helps it get better is people playing it and people being exposed to it. And eventually, you sort of get used to it. Well, unfortunately, I think the double impact we're going to have here is, we're going to have new rules and we're going to have less places to get together and play. So you're going to have – that's going to negatively affect, you know, people being able to get out there and be exposed to it and start getting used to it. So – I think that's not going to help things. I mean, I hate to be negative, but that's what I see happening. I mean, what you need to do is you need to get that out there, get people playing it. They get used to it. They say, oh, this is not so bad, or, oh, this is even better. And then it picks up from there. So that's kind of what I see.
I agree. That's definitely a danger, I think. I mean, in order to learn the new rules, in order to get used to them, you have to play the game.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a space to do that. We need time to do that.
It's definitely going to be a challenge.
Yeah.
We're a challenged community.
I think, though, I'm sure there's other communities that are facing the same thing. But we've said it before, but the thing is, the community has to stick together and find the way that makes the most sense for them to move forward. And that's the key. You can't sit on your hands and just wait for someone to make a decision. I mean, when we found out about Walker's story, I started talking to some people and said, look, what would you like to do? I mean, I made my point about it. I don't think we should just do basements because we need to have a public face.
Everybody I talked to said basement gaming is, you know, the worst case scenario.
Right.
Don't want that to happen. Nobody wants to go back to the basement.
Which is good, because then everybody's on the same page.
Right.
So then all we need to do is try and get everybody on the same page regarding where we want to go game. And
you know, we've had it so easy for so long.
Yeah.
Even through multiple stores, we've always had Wednesday night. That's been War Machine Hordes night. Even, you know, across different businesses. And so now that both the location and time might not work out for everybody, this is a big blow that we've never had before.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like you're saying, more communication, getting everybody in on the same plane, you know, just even online talking about, well, here's my schedule, you know, what would work for you guys. Maybe in the beginning, we'll have to have little pockets that will you know, have to play in little pockets here and there for a while. And then whenever things work out, maybe those can join into one huge knight, maybe. I don't know.
It's totally going to be a resistance cell.
Exactly. I mean, I imagine this post-apocalyptic thing where everybody's in their bunkers. You know, if you play Earth Dawn, we're in our cares, waiting for the horrors to go away so we can come out and play again. I know Dave appreciates that
analogy. Yay, yeah. Earth Dawn. Best role-playing game ever.
Biggest smile on his face. This is such an upbeat episode.
It is.
It is, but I think it's a necessary topic.
Yeah. It is. No, I know you're right, but it's...
I mean, I think... I kind of feel... I'm sure there's like other communities out there that are saying like, wow, this is news to you guys. It happens to us all the time or that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's other communities that are just don't see how this could possibly happen to them too. We were one of them for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, we're talking about this from the perspective of we have a large community, a number of stores. We've kind of got to figure out where to go and how to stick together mm-hmm. and what to do to support ourselves in the weeks that the stores can't. Those issues might not all be relevant to someone, but individually, who knows?
Well, like you're saying, there are plenty of communities out there, and because I've seen people say this online, they would love to have a store that they could lose because they don't even have a store.
Right.
Yeah.
They have trouble finding the product, ordering it online. There are people out there who have the models and never played a game because they just can't find people to play with. So, you know, count your blessings, but, you know, don't put all your eggs in one basket either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that's I mean, in that case, I think you've got to go the route that we kind of talked about is if there's no store owner, I don't know if you can have a press ganger. You might be able to still get one. But even Maybe. If not, you need to kind of have someone step up to be the community liaison. You need to start talking to locations, trying to find space and, you know, start small.
There's lots of space out there.
There is.
Finding a smaller space for a weekly game, I'm not sure. But you can certainly find something like on a monthly basis if you want to run a big tournament or something.
Right.
That's easily enough found. You know, Knights of Columbus, VFW, whatever.
Weekly is probably a little bit harder than something like monthly.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
You might have to be satisfied with a basement or something, and I hate saying that, but you know, if you're in that community and you don't have a space, well, maybe that's probably where you are anyway.
Right.
You're in each other's basements and garages.
Mm-hmm. So.
But, you know, nowadays, no better way to find people than to jump on the web, make a website. You know, Neil Morte Ray, he just started GameKansasCity.com to get their community together.
Mm-hmm.
And just in a couple of weeks' time, they've got a ton of people who never play together. Already setting up games between each other.
That's great. You're right. At this day and age, it is so nice because I sort of remember what it was like, you know, 10, 15 years ago. I mean, before we had such a strong and easily usable internet presence like this, it's just, you know, well, you know, it was back in the days, basically, you know, you would try to find people to role play by going to the store and putting a index card up on the pegboard. You know, those days are not gone. They still happens, but you don't need to do that. I mean, mm-hmm.
You've got the forums. I never did that.
I never did either, but I've certainly seen them.
Sure.
You know, and you there's even, you know, there's at the game stores you'll see them, but that used to be the primary way. You put your card up there and see what you could find.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So with the forums, it is great. It is a great resource, and I think it's what's going to help us weather through this. Definitely. I mean, the community will be in contact because mm-hmm. you know the forums are there. They're great forums, and that's mm-hmm. a great way to keep, you know, in conversation, in contact. So,
but just, yeah, even for a community that's first forward, I'm kind of sitting here thinking like, all right, so I'm going to post in the internet and say, look, I'd like to play War Machine. Is there any other people who play this game or would like to learn? Some random guy I've never met before says, yeah, come on over to my basement. Here's my address. Maybe I'm not too happy. You know, I'd like to know people first mm-hmm. before I, you know, go to their house maybe.
Sure.
In that case, that's where the public venue really has its advantage.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, every time I go meet strangers from the internet, never mind. No.
Yeah, what you've got to remember, you always got to call one of your buddies, like, you know, call Dave or Josh.
Uh-huh.
I'm sorry, you call
– He is Josh.
Call Dave or me, and you've got to let us know where you're going, you know, the address, when you're going, what time you're going to, you know, expect to be back.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't hear from you, we've at least got that information.
And you give us your cell phone number so we can call you, and we can we can get you out of the date if it's not going well.
Go.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that was a business associate.
Oh,
I gotta go.
Sorry. I'm a doctor. I got to go open a guy up and pull out a sponge. Sorry.
Left some forceps in there.
But, yeah, I mean, that's – it's tough mm-hmm. for any community to build itself up or rebuild when something happens.
Well, you know, just like an economy itself, once it starts to drag, it starts to pull itself down more and more. Mm-hmm. You got to get it jump started somehow. So there might be some issues here that, you know, you got to force yourself to go out and set up some games in a store that may not carry the product. You got to make sure that your name is out there. The presence is known, like you were saying, you know, make sure that don't be lax in it. Make sure tournaments are scheduled once in a while, you know, every 2 or 3 months, if that's all you can handle. You got to do something that you can't let it die. You got to keep the plate spinning.
You spin the plates on sticks?
Yes.
Preferably.
That's while you're playing War Machine. It's an interesting way to play it. You should
try. Wow.
But yeah, you know, you got to get out there. You can't let it die. You can't let it drag down. It's easier said than done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's get organized, get a presence in real life and on the internet,
mm-hmm.
and just keep at it.
Yep.
All right. So we've done a little bit of doomsaying, talking about bad stuff. Talk about good stuff. Talk about playing games.
Yeah.
At DICON.
That's right. Privateer weekend too.
In the 350 hardcore.
That's right. You only get one list. At a War Machine weekend, when we were signing up, I made two lists, not thinking. And I think you saw my sheet. You're like, why do you have two lists? I'm like, what do you mean, why? I'm like, a Tarkor. I'm like, oh, yeah. You only get one. So don't make that mistake.
So it better be a good one.
That's right.
So we all brought lists because these are 350 lists. And this should go quick.
I think so.
All right. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
I brought a Legion list. And because of her effectiveness at the point level, I picked Saren. I've got both an Angelius and a Carnivian. And a Shredder to fill out my points.
Angelius, Carnivian, and a Shredder.
Yep, only four models. Why Saren? Well, your feat makes you immune to melee, which is going to at least nerf one turn worth of most enemies.
Mm-hmm.
The Angelius has the up and over capability. It can also put a big hurt on a Warjack, because if you can strip a system, it's not coming back.
Yep.
With that one good pierce, especially on a light, you can just take it out completely, maybe. But with a heavy, you might be able to cripple it. And if Saren's got her feet up after the Angelius went in, you're not going to retaliate that turn.
Mm-hmm.
The Carnivian is in there for the beatstick capability. Pow, 18 on the bite, 16 on the claws. That's great. It's also got that spray, which you never know when that can be useful. Also, it can slam, unfortunately, where the Angelius can't. That could be useful. He's there just to be a big giant beatstick. And a Shredder, both to fill out points, and because of its Animus, Tenacity is very good. Just that extra point of armor or defense might make the difference. Saren herself has a number of utilities which can come into play here. Other than her feat, she has Breath Stealer, which reduces a model's speed and defense by 2, making hitting them easier and preventing a charge. And because that spell's not upkeep, she can cast it multiple times a turn, which means if your opponent has, say, like I do, 2 heavies, which are normally lower defense, Breath Steal one, Breath Steal the other, and then they're not charging you.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's not upkeep, most things that get rid of upkeep spells can't get rid of it. So you have a slight advantage in that regard. You do have to repeatedly hit with it every turn, but it only costs 2 of her 7 fury each time to try it. So even if she boosts both of them, she has 1 fury left. On top of that, Blightbringer, an auto-hitting POW 13 on a Warlock or Warcaster if you need it, could be a good deal. It's not as useful in this format because there's not swaths of infantry to take out, but it's not bad. And then there's Mirror Magic. Most casters have that one signature spell they can cast an upkeep and screw you over. And Saren's one signature spell is your signature spell, which is quite handy.
Mm-hmm.
So she will be able to put that on, like maybe Arcane Shield and Angelius, because that's funny. She also has Equilibrium, which you can use to fill up your beasts so you can't transfer to get assassination off if you're playing hordes. And her daggers that prevent tough, prevent transfers, prevent healing, that sort of stuff.
Do those also ignore focus?
They do not. But they can... That is actually where I see that. Actually, when I got to the hard part is getting through War Machine armor. That's why the Carnivian's in there. If someone like, say, Krios is camping on all his armor, all his focus... The Angelius can't really get through that very well. Neither can Saren. You need that heavy hitting model, which can punch through the armor, and that's where the Carnivian fits in. So four models at 350 points. Activations are probably going to be relatively quick. The only thing that I feel that I'm really, really missing in this list is going to be Slipstream, just the ability to reposition. I'm going to feel it missing, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. Small, compact. There you go. What do you guys think?
It's actually an interesting combination of melee and range, because two of those models, or three really, of the board can fire a ranged weapon. Can they not?
Yes, they can.
So that's actually kind of interesting. In case you are in a position where you can't go in and melee, if you can't charge for whatever reason, just spray, shoot, throw a dagger.
Yep. Most of those aren't high pow.
Sure.
But you could take out, for example, a light that's harassing you, maybe. Mm-hmm. So.
What's the speed on that Carnivian? Is he a 5?
He's a 6.
Is he a 6?
Yes.
That makes him worse. For some reason, I always think he's a 5. A fast, heavy like that is a little bit scary.
Yeah.
Sending him up front.
And I don't have to worry about him getting charged if I can breast dealer you, which right. is, that's key, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, considering this is mangled metal tooth and claw, his spiny growth, is that what it's called?
Yes.
That prevents, makes me not want to necessarily attack with my war beast.
Yep, spiny growth gives him 2 points of armor, and if he's attacked by a war beast who hits him, it takes D3 damage.
But it's just beast, it's not war jacks, right?
I believe so.
Okay. Either way, that's going to be probably half your opponents anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
I think, in my opinion, at an event like this, you're going to see more Hordes in the War Machine mm-hmm. because of basically the double dipping on Fury.
Right, right.
So I think that at this point, now that there are a lot of beast options for Warlocks for all the factions, mm-hmm. Especially, you know, like trolls have, what, 3-4 types of dire trolls now they can use?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that you're going to see probably more Hordes and War Machine.
Yeah.
War Machine's advantage, though, is the higher armor, like I mentioned. It's hard for me to punch through some of that stuff.
Right.
A Behemoth is going to be a pain in the ass.
And occasionally, there are the War Machine models that can really just take down anything they want. The Cankworm always comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cankworm will wipe out whatever it wants in one turn. So those little things here and there help War Machine sneak in. But overall, I think it will be Hordes mm-hmm. dominated. Are we just going to compare our three lists here, use my list against yours and so on, or are we just taking all comers?
I just say, let's just talk about the list in general first.
In general, like you're saying, you know, there's going to be the one turn where I will not be able to touch you in melee. Mm-hmm. And generally, also, like you said, I'm not going to have non-melee options, at least, especially with the factions I play. I might have a spell here and there, but nothing that's going to take down the model like I need to on that one turn. Because you're going to have that Angelius right up in my face. You'll just thrust for free, more or less, on that next turn. With Crix, I know I've actually played, I think it was a 350 game we played last year at Daikon. You had something very similar to this, and I had Gorshade
mm-hmm.
around that game. Was that in a 350? It was a game that we played right before tournament.
Right, yeah. I remember that very, very briefly.
You did what you just said. You know, you swarmed after feeding with Saren, and I couldn't retaliate. My only option was to take Gorshade, feed with his banes, and try to do something with those, you know, try to lock down Saren, hoping to survive that turn. I didn't, because like you're saying, you had the thrust there. You had all sorts of things to beat me down with.
I actually, in that game, I took, instead of a Carnivian, I had a Seraph and some more Shredders.
That's right.
And I feed on them and had them run in a circle or a triangle around Gorshade and mm-hmm. pin him in place.
Right.
That was very nice. And that's pretty much what kept him from doing anything.
Right, right. It's very difficult to take Saren down whenever you only have melee in your list. And missing her with AoEs isn't an option either, typically. So
I think that Denegar is pretty decent.
Yeah, really, what isn't she decent?
This is true.
Although she's going to have stuff for you to steal out there. She has lots of stuff you're going to be stealing. So Crix, let's say, has lots of upkeep spells for you to steal, so I have to be careful on who I choose. I actually went up against Saren with Asphyxius once, just regular Prime Asphyxius. He did rather well with the whole Breath of Corruption spam, which missing on that, she can't redirect it because it's not a ranged attack. Has mm-hmm. attack. So that worked pretty well. I was playing Kratos. He had just enough Shredders to keep himself alive. But I would say Asphyxius, because he's awesome in melee, which again, he won't be able to use on that one turn. But on the turn he goes, if he can parasite you, maybe Scything Touch himself and go in for the kill, that's an effective POW 20 weapon. He'll kill whatever he wants. So I'll say Asphyxius just because he's a good mix of melee and range that he might be able to melee and magic that he could use on that off turn whenever you feed.
I like that you pick Asphyxius because he's on a medium base.
I know.
And I have an Angelius.
But Crix has plenty of medium base and large right. base. It's yeah. so hard to get away from that sometimes.
Sure.
But he's actually a pretty good choice, I think, since I have used him against Saren that one or two times. I'll go with him.
Okay. What about you, Pat?
Well, just to sort of to agree with what Josh was saying before, I mean, you've got the – first of all, you got that Carnivian, which is just horrible. It's fast on its own, and it's the big beat stick, but that Angelius – is even faster, so it's going to be up in your face really quickly. So you got to deal with that. I don't know. I playing Signar, play to my strengths with the ranged, I guess. I guess on my opening rounds, I'm going to try to take something that I can at least shoot at, say, the Angelius, I guess, since it's going to be there first, and try to take it down, just sort of whittle your beasts away. I guess I'll just sort of, in talking about the list that I was going to bring, I guess what I'll do is I'll just sort of talk about the list that I brought and say how I would use that against this one. My list is Kray, two hunters, and a sentinel. Obviously, this is a ranged list. The other thing I like about it is that it is fairly mobile, you know, because of what Kray is able to do with my light jacks have basically are treated as light cavalry. So I've got the cavalry, you know, I've got that extra movement. With that in mind, I think I would probably focus on, you know, focus fire on that Angelius if I, you know, with the hunters and even the sentinel, but primarily I guess the hunters to try to take it down, at least get it wounded before it gets up there in my face, because taking out at least one aspect was going to help me, as I would say, somewhat, and then try to do that. And again, the sort of the point of my list is I'm going to be going against your beasts or jacks, try to take those out as opposed to go against your warcaster and try to win that way. So
is that a victory condition in this tournament?
I think it will be. I think Vader is going to model it after the War Machine weekend, 350 hardcore, okay. In which case taking out the beast or jacks is a win condition.
Yeah. Obviously if that, it was not the case, then I would probably think of another list, you know, to take, but, cause I think this one could be effective at taking out the beasts or jacks.
Well, what's the range in your guns?
My hunters both have 14 inch range.
Okay.
The sentinel is only 10, but I'm thinking the sentinel is going to be sort of the second line. I mean, you know, keep it closer to Kray. It's not going to shield the mind of me because Kray's on a large base. That's the other thing. I don't like Kray for that reason, because in that large base, he's just a big target, but he's fat. He's fast and mobile. So I can keep him back. You know, he's got 11 inch range on his gun. He's got 7 inch movement.
You mentioned that there were essentially light jacks or a light cavalry with him. You can, in a sense, add their speed to the range of the gun if you're concerned mm-hmm. about that.
True. So yeah. So with a hunter's movement is 6. So I've kind of got a 20 inch threat range with the hunters.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with that in mind, I can sort of stay back. I can shoot. And the nice thing is with them, I can move them up, shoot you, and then move them back.
You can mm-hmm. even pop the reserve tank after that.
Exactly. So they both got that. So they can stay back. And I think that's going to be key. That's really what I'm going to try to do is try to shoot you from far and stay back, because once you engage me, I mean, the hunters, they are certainly glass cannons. They are low armored. Medium defense, but you know, you hit them once, that's pretty much going to be it for them. The sentinel's a little bit better, and you know, and the sentinel is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, if you know, once you get into range, I mean, it's only got a 10 inch range, but once you do get into range, Kray's going to have guided fire up, so he's pretty much going to hit you
with his POW 10s.
With his POW 10s, you know, depending on the armor, it's
17 or 18
on your guys,
Angelus and Carnivian, yeah.
Yeah.
Might take out that shredder pretty easily.
It would if you can get the shredder.
Yeah. And the other thing I could do is, you know, with the shredder against you, maybe I don't know what Saren's defense and
16.
Well, you know, I'd say with the sentinel, probably instead of shooting at your beasts, I would probably try to get in to where I could shoot at Saren herself, because I'll hit you most likely. And then I'll be doing POW 10s versus your 13 armor?
14.
So I'll at least do damage that way that you'll either have to take or transfer. And
what's your
that
rat?
Damage, huh?
What's your rat?
5 starting, 7 on the strafe.
How are you going to hit me when I'm sitting behind cover and concealment or everything else on the table?
Well, you know what? Hey, and I know how you play, so I probably won't hit you at all. So I'd have, you know, I'd have to try what I can.
Yeah.
He does have mage sight, which might eliminate some of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Actually, you're right. Mage sight could help. Mm-hmm. You know, barring that, probably go against the shredder. You know.
Yeah.
So I will say this. My outlook is grim going against this list. Because that's just my luck with Legion mm-hmm. in the past. So I wouldn't want to face that. That would be pretty nasty. But I'd do what I can. I'd throw as much lead as I can at you and hope for the best.
It's kind of funny. Your list versus, you know, Legion versus Kray. It's sort of the train on the table in a lot of cases. Isn't even there. Especially for the Legion player, but even for Kray, mm-hmm. in a sense, you can ignore mm-hmm. a lot of it.
I think that it's really going to depend on the terrain setup and how things are, mm-hmm. Because if I can get decent terrain, I'm not really worried about this matchup myself. But yeah, if I can get the jump on your jacks, that's going to be what I'm going to have to try and do. My big concern is that you're going to play the kind of game that I think is boring and shit, and that is I'm going to stay away from you and just shoot the Haley Turtle type stuff. And that's effective, but not fun to play, unfortunately. So
really, though, that's kind of funny for you to say that his style of play and using this would be kind of boring, considering your feet eliminates the other style of play that you probably want to play against.
Melee.
Oh, it's not range that I'm worried about. It's the range with the exceptional movement to keep away.
Which would then lead you into melee you want to get into.
Well, so. Yeah, I want to get it. But like a shooty list with someone, well, let's say Nemo. You got Nemo and Shooty Jacks or mm-hmm. Kane and Shooty Jacks. That's not the big of a deal because you can't move after you shoot. If you shoot me, you're tied close enough to get to melee.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the move and shoot, stay away, not that I'm...
There'll be a little bit of that, but I think with the speed and the maneuverability of your own forces, I don't think that would be that boring to play against.
Oh, yeah, this list certainly, he's going to be fast and get there. I mean, other lists are going to have that, I can definitely stay away from them for a while at least. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, yours, I don't, not as much.
So it's pretty much going to be, I'm going to have to keep, defenses up on the beast as I can. Keep them far apart. You can only mage sight one at a time, mm-hmm. and spend my fury primarily healing as I advance, mm-hmm. and just keep everything up. And obviously that one turn when you reserve tank, you're going to move really far with your hunters after you shoot. But after that, hopefully try and get a jump on them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I can keep those occupied and get the Angelus to Cray, that's even better.
Really, you just need the one turn to get up to him. If you can survive getting up there, then I think the Legion player would have a good chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Cray's with the large base, he's got mm-hmm. you're gonna be able to see him. You're gonna be able to hit him.
I need to get and he's like
not gonna. I mean, I'm not gonna be camping on all my focus because the way I'm gonna have to play this, probably. Well, depending on how hard things are to hit, I'll probably have Guided Fire up. I'll have at least a focus on each of my jacks. So he's not going to be camping on a lot of focus. He might have one, maybe mm-hmm. two. So he's not going to have a lot of armor for you to punch through.
Yep. So I got to try and press steal those jacks or Cray, keep them in place and get up there.
Mm-hmm. And Cray's focus is only going to go so far. He gets stretched pretty thin as soon as he starts allocating to those jacks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he'd have to be really careful with that.
That's why he'd be my primary target if I could.
He'd be low on focus most of the time.
Because if I start killing jacks, he's going to have extra focus.
Yep.
Okay, Joshua, what would you do against Pat?
Like you were saying, getting to Cray, if you can get to Cray, then he goes down pretty easy a lot of times. His armor isn't super high. He's usually lost most of his focus to his jacks, and he's a big target.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any thrusting, unfortunately, like Dave does. So it's not nearly as fun. I have to get up there and do it myself with a cankerworm who has a different kind of thrust.
Mm-hmm.
So if I had a list. I already discussed Chris, so I'll go with Crick, so I'll go with a circle. I'll take Kaya. I'll take a Shadowhorn Satyr. Take an Argus and two Gorax. That's going to let me get up to Cray anytime I want.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Mage Sight ignores stealth, I think.
Yes.
I know it ignores visibility, so I'm sure it ignores stealth. One of my beasts is going to be stealth most of the time. So you'll ignore that. But one thing I might try to do is put that on the Argus or the Satyr. Because they're going to be forward. They're going to be up far ahead. If I can trick you into using your Mage Sight to hit that stealth model, I might be able to sneak the other one in to get up into Spirit Door range on Cray.
Guided Fire and Mage Sight are both two focus.
Oh, wow.
So if he casts both of them, mm-hmm. he's got two left. That's it. He's not feeding all his jacks.
Sorry. You got your Legends there. How much is Cray's armor, just so I know?
It should be 17.
I think he's 17, yeah.
Was he 14, 17?
14, 17, I believe. 17,
that's what I thought.
I think it would be easier for Kaya to get up to him. And really, Kaya goes wherever she wants anyway. The problem with her, of course, is that her pop of strength is only 11 on her weapon. And she's not going to get any crit knockdown on him because he's not going to get knocked down. So hitting him and actually damaging him might be a little bit troublesome.
I think your better bet is trying to shed a door another beast to him.
Well, that's obviously the other option, yeah. She's fast in and of herself. So it's Cray. So it's going to be a little game of chicken here. Everybody's going to be moving all over the table. This would actually be an interesting game to see, I think, because the models would just be everywhere.
Doesn't she have a movement-reducing spell as well?
She has Spirit Fang, which is defense and speed, I think. It's off the top of my head, so don't quote me on
but
that.
But you have to wound them.
Yeah, you have to you have to hit and wound, and so she's going to have problems with all
it's
that.
It's only power 11, so that's kind of hard. Yeah.
So it's low. So even her spells aren't going to do her that much good. This game would just be a game of going and going and going and getting up to Cray as fast as I possibly could. But that's with her. And then probably bringing in the Satyr. Or even a Gorax might even be better. I can't remember what his pop of strength is. But with his Animus, having one Gorax, say, primaling the other Gorax, I could spirit door that guy up to Cray, that would be kind of funny. With that extra strength in the mat, going to town on Cray could be fun. So he's got 18 health, and that's going to be difficult to whittle away at. So it's going to be little attack after little attack. I can see expending every single one of my resources to killing him. All of my Fury and Kaya, forcing all my beasts to max to kill him. I think it's possible if you get up to him, especially with Kaya and, say, a heavy. Maybe not a Shadowhorn if I had a Gnarlhorn in there, or even a Werewolf might even be better. But the Shadowhorn's so cheap, I took him.
I think it'd be kind of interesting. I mean, if you could get, like kind of I talked about with Saren that one time, you could get one beast up there, run a second one up there, and then Spirit Door, so you basically get a triangle around where Kray can't walk away.
That would
you
be
can
difficult.
Keep enough Fury on Kaya herself.
Mm-hmm.
You're in melee. It's going to be hard to shoot you with his jacks. You basically kind of mm-hmm. pinned him in. You might be able to, if you can last that turn, you know, he's going to turn, try and beat on you with a sword, but if you can last that turn,
mm-hmm.
then you've got him pinned in.
Yeah, those three models would have to be Kaya, the Shadowhorn, and the Argus, because the Gorax are not going to be able to get up there that fast. If I could do that, that would be actually kind of funny. I can see his feet coming into play at that point if the jacks are facing the right direction. Actually, the jacks don't need to face that direction. Feeding and trying to clear out one of those beasts for him to escape.
Well, if he's feeded, he's done moving.
Yeah, this is true. That's true.
Well, I'm sorry. If he feeds and
if
the jack
feed,
activates.
That means he's already activated. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Hitting him might be funny. I think that would be so difficult, though. But
it would.
If it's there, it's certainly something to do.
I mean, that's one of the cases where I would have actually probably preferred my alternate list, which I was looking at, which would be instead of the Carnivian and one Shredder, a Seraph and three. Because
mm-hmm.
you could feed on the Shredders and they could just run and go rabid and right. run upfield.
Yeah.
And then you have the beasts following behind, which would be highly useful in this case. The problem with that list was, though, it doesn't have that big punch.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think pretty much playing as Kray boils down to pin him down.
Although, and this would be more difficult, I think, or maybe about as difficult. Again, you can also clear out the jacks. They're all lights. They're all not going to take much of a hit. If you can get up to them individually, then you could take them out. But they're going to be spread out. It's going to be difficult.
Argus runs one, you Spirit Door, Kai kills it.
She's got a hit. She's going to be exhausting all her focus, Fury, and then she'd be able to...
What's her mat?
Six.
Mm, yeah. She's an eight to hit on her.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, if you get that crit, though...
That's true. That crit seems to show up more than it should, I think, on her. It seems like it always pops up.
But... I guess, you know, playing against you, that's the only matchup we haven't really talked about here.
Yes, that's true.
It would be, you know, feet and run out there and get your stuff tied down again.
Yep.
Feet and let you come to me or something.
Yeah, if I'm lucky, I might have a beast out there that I could spirit door myself out to escape from your trio. But I mean, really.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to try and chase you down. Pretty much at this point, I'm trying to chase either one of you down and you're trying to chase Pat down.
Yeah.
That's
a common theme here.
Yeah. So.
And my only advantage against you is that I have that extra model on the table. But that extra model is probably going to be that second Gorax, which isn't going to do a whole lot for me, except maybe be a Spirit Door target for me to leap out of your...
Yeah.
Your
well, pin. I mean, if you can get to my beasts, Goraxes can tear them up. I'm mm-hmm. just going to have to keep stuff Breath Stolen
right.
and slowed down so you can't charge me, mm-hmm. at least. But, I mean, a Gorax, it's got its Animus on it, using all four of its Fury... That's not bad damage output at all.
No, that's not.
Chances are that would take down the Angelius and maybe the Carnivian if some decent rolls.
I can't really count on the pain response, but if that's there, then that's gravy.
Yeah. So I got to be very careful with when I'm going to get my feet out there. That's going to be the tough part.
Right.
So I think that's it. I guess that pretty much does it for our Horde armies, Josh. But what would you take if you were going to do War Machine?
I actually did this at War Machine Weekend this past summer. I had a lot of fun taking Denegra, the Cankerworm, and I filled out the rest with Arc Nodes. I can't remember exactly which ones I took. Maybe two Death Reapers and a Night Wretch. I can't remember. That was very, very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Going up against a lot of jack-heavy casters, those tend to be larger bases, which works great for the Cankerworm doing his piercing or his ablation. You know, she has venom, puts that venom out, or that corrosion out there wherever she wants. It was a very, very effective force. I was able to run away from everything. I could sacrifice arc node after arc node just to block lanes or whatever. First two opponents were Karchev, both Karchevs, and he went down so easy. It's not even funny. Hopefully, I hope to see him improved in Mark 2. But I was able to keep his jacks away just by pinning him in. I was able to keep a Kodiak away once just by deliberately charging it with Denegro, staying 2 inches away, pinning it in place with her spear, and so that Kodiak was out of the game. And I was able to block line of sight to Karchev with him, so Karchev couldn't charge me, couldn't cast a spell. And so Denegro is so versatile to begin with. In smaller games, I think she's even more powerful. Mm-hmm. And that surely showed in that War Machine. So I'd take Denegro. Mm-hmm. Figure. Go figure.
Yeah. I'd probably do something with Kreas. Same reason. I mean, Kreas, I'd probably go ahead and bring a Redeemer. Mm-hmm. If you get either a Hordes Warlock, a Light Caster, or if you've got to use it to take out some Light Jacks, hitting those POW 12 rockets would work okay. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I really don't know. I'd have to take a look at my options and points to fill in something. Fire probably wouldn't be bad, but he's points extensive. Mm-hmm. The Avatar is probably a little too points extensive for my taste. But maybe just basic Crusaders. I might even bring a Guardian, depending on what the list is. Potentially a Devout.
Right.
If I need to do my little you can't hurt me warding the devout and having it ward me
type
thing. So I don't know, but basically my strategy would be to either drop and pop your jacks or your caster. And I'd have to do it early against someone like Denegra to take out Arc Nodes quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. As for Kador, I've seen Tim have success with the Old Witch Scrapjack, obviously, and in Behemoth. That's a pretty potent combo.
I thank God you can't play Epics at 350. Mm-hmm. A little Epic Morgul and some Cyclopses.
That would be horrible.
Yeah. I think Morgul and Cyclopses will work.
I think so.
I think that he's light on Fury.
He's great in 350, I think.
But yeah.
He's fantastic.
I mean, his feats has no transfers.
Sure.
Of course, his feats not good against War Machine, but...
Sure. But against half your opponents, maybe. Possibly more than that.
But if you can get a Cyclops to do some damage to your opponent mm-hmm. with his anatomical precision mm-hmm. and double strike,
he can... If you can knock down, just go up and say, how many points you got left? Okay, automatically win.
Yeah. He can do...
14, I think.
Each Fury buys two attacks,
so he can do 12 because he gets two for free, right?
Yeah. So he if you're knocked down, that's basically 12 auto points.
Yep.
So you get up there, have a Cyclops headbutt somebody, mm-hmm. smack him with a sword if you have to, yep. and then win.
Yep.
And he can't be no free strikes on or anything like that, so he just runs up there.
Yep. It's pretty powerful. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, is that it for today?
I think so.
All right, we're a little light today, but at least we got a tactical topic in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But, there you go.
Sorry to bum everybody out.
Yeah. Are we just depressing the listeners?
You know, they say the best thing for a bad mood is to spread it around.
Hey, there you go.
Haha. Feel my pain, bitches.
All right, we're emo.
We're so emo.
Am I the only one that dressed up like that today?
This is dressed up for you?
I wondered why you had red fur on, but I wasn't going to say anything.
I mean, the black lipstick's normal.
Sure, yeah.
Hey, you know what? We missed a piece of news.
Oh, what's up?
Oh.
Our About Us page.
Oh, is that up?
Do you want it to be up?
Yeah.
It's up.
I've been expecting
it.
Yes, we have our About Us page with email contact information for each of us individually. It will be up on the site by the time this goes live.
Awesome. You can see how goofy we all look.
Yep.
And then you'll probably never listen to us again.
I'll Photoshop Josh's picture to add the black lipstick in.
Nice.
No, let's not do that.
And I'll paint a tear on you.
There you go.
All right. Is that it? Anything else you guys got?
I think that's it.
You guys want to pimp yourselves? I pimped myself earlier.
If I move, if our house goes through, I'm going to have an awesome gaming basement.
Hey, that's true. Yeah.
All I got to do is game again.
All I have to do is game again.
Yeah.
I do. You have to start role playing again.
Yeah, oh, my non-War Machine. Yeah. Sure. I guess. We'll see.
Pat, you gonna pimp yourself?
Nope. Nothing to pimp.
You damn straight you've got nothing to pimp.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And on that note,
we'll see everybody next week.
See ya.
Bye. Later.
To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2009 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.